Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Hey, it's Carol and Tim.
And we have something new and exciting for you.
Everything you love about Bloomberg Radio is now in your car.
The new Bloomberg Business app, now featuring Apple CarPlay and Android Auto.
Listen to your favorite Bloomberg radio stations anytime.
Plus every Bloomberg podcast, the latest news and more, all at the click of a button.
It's free and simple to use. Just download the Bloomberg Business app on your smartphone and connect your phone to your car.
The Bloomberg Business app, now with Apple CarPlay and Android Auto features. Download it free in the Apple App Store or on Google Play.
Presented by our sponsor, Interactive Brokers.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. Insight from the reporters and editors who bring you America's most trusted business magazine. Plus, global business, finance, and tech news. The Bloomberg Business Week podcast with Carol Messer and Tim Stenebeck from Bloomberg Radio.
All right, well, big news over the weekend in the world of weight loss drugs. Novo Nordisk, that's the maker of the blockbuster weight loss drug Wegovy, unveiled details from a closely watched study that supports the use of Wegovy to cut heart attacks and deaths in obesity patients with a history of cardiovascular disease.
Okay, so along with weight loss, people taking the highest dose of Wegovy saw a drop in blood sugar and inflammation. Those are two harbingers of heart disease.
Yeah, one of our next guests writes that this is the most important in a string of positive developments that could make the treatments more widely accessible. Let's get into it. Lisa Jarvis, is a Bloomberg Opinion columnist. Lisa Jarvis covers biotech, healthcare, and the pharmaceutical industry. She writes today about the recent winning streak that we are seeing with these types of drugs. Tim is on Zoom from Chicago.
And here in New York City in the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studio is Madison Mueller. She's health reporter for Bloomberg News. She's written a ton about these GLP-1 drugs. She joins us right here in the Interactive Broker studio. Madison, I want to start with you because you had the story over the weekend about the study. Novo Nordisk had kind of come out a few months ago and given some information about this, but give us the details here and why this is such a big deal.
Yeah, so back in August, Novo Nordisk top-lined these results, and the reaction back then even was it sort of set off a frenzy. Like, that's when really the excitement about these drugs started. There was read through to Eli Lilly, which also has an obesity drug. But at the time, experts were kind of unclear what was actually driving this heart benefit. We saw that heart attacks and strokes were cut by 20%, but they were like, okay, well, there's you know, some interaction with different cardiometabolic diseases. This sort of makes sense. But is that all? Is it just the weight loss that's driving this heart benefit, or is something else going on? And this study helped illuminate that there might be something else going on. I mean, we saw reductions in blood sugar levels, anti-inflammatory effects. Patients in the study didn't develop diabetes, because they were on these drugs that were at risk of developing diabetes. So there were all of these other sort of knock-on effects, and I mean, they're still trying to figure out if there might be even more benefit that we're not seeing in this study.
I feel like these drugs are going to solve world peace and climate change. They just seem to be able to do more and more. I'm being facetious and a little exaggeration. But nonetheless, it's pretty amazing. It feels like the more we learn about them, and there's still a lot that, Lisa Jarvis, come on in, that we don't know exactly how they work. But you write about obesity drugs. They've not been a great vertical, if you will, in the pharmaceutical industry, but it does feel like this is something different.
It definitely is something different. You know, in the past, we've seen earlier classes of drugs that just didn't work as well. You know, people would lose max 5% of their weight. They came with really, you know, sort of troublesome safety side effects. And that's not to say that these drugs don't have safety issues that, you know, you want to be aware of, but people are losing as much as 20%. And in some cases, in extremer cases for the newer classes of drugs, you know, up to 30%, that's profound. That's a lot of weight loss. And I think it's the reason why you're seeing so much excitement from obviously people in obesity medicine. But as Madison was saying, you know, we're getting more data out to prove that these drugs could have benefits well beyond kind of lifestyle changes into areas like cardiovascular health. I mean, it's kind of important to remember that heart disease is still the number one killer in the US. And so I think that's driving a lot of the excitement. There could be lots of other areas where losing the weight and by still yet to be determined mechanisms, you know, these drugs are helping to have other health effects.
That's what I wanted to ask Madison. You know, is it a case of you lose weight and that's the benefit? We know losing weight can do so much for your health. But is it a case of that? Or is it also that there's something magical or something special within this type of drug that is showing to do more than just lose weight?
I think that that's still what experts are trying to figure out.
We don't
out.
Know, right?
Yeah, and there was some hint that there's something else going on sort of in this study because we saw immediately, you know, when people started taking these drugs, there was sort of a break. Like people that were taking these drugs from the beginning were seeing better effects than the placebo group, the people that weren't taking these drugs. So there is something going on. It's just, I think it's still sort of a mystery what that is.
Lisa, what I find so interesting about this whole conversation is the insurance element here. They're so expensive, and we know that insurance will generally cover them when these drugs are used for diabetes, but what about when they're used for weight loss? I think the question I have for you is, well, okay, if this indeed can help with so many different other ailments, on a net basis, doesn't this mean potentially a reduction in healthcare costs for the insurance companies because they're not dealing with cardiovascular disease, they're not dealing with other obesity-related illnesses, even if they are supporting something that costs $1,000 a month?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really the $100 billion question, which is the size that people are projecting this market could be. I think it's still to be determined, right? Like we've seen this health effect, and that was a long study. You know, this study took place over the course of 4 years that people were on these drugs. It's worth noting that close to, I think, over 17% of the patients in the trial dropped off the drugs. And so, you know, do you need to stay on them for life to get the health effects? What does that mean in terms of, you know, the health savings that you might see? You know, as Madison noted, people's blood pressure dropped, they didn't get diabetes, you know, those obviously have savings, but I think there's a lot of different analyses going in both directions over whether or not the savings outweigh the costs at the current price structure. And given the millions and millions of people that could be, you know, eligible for them ultimately. So I think there's going to be a lot of folks doing calculations over the course of the coming years as we understand better how long people stay on the drugs for, how long they have to be on them in order to see those kind of benefits, and whether the benefits are sustaining after they get off the drug. One thing this trial didn't do was look at, like, what happened to the people who stopped taking the drug? Did their improvement in cardiovascular health, was that sustained even if they stopped taking the drug?
Yeah, I find it interesting too. If you look at in terms of movers to the upside, Dexcom, which makes glucose monitoring devices, it's been rallying several weeks in a row here. DaVita, which is a kidney dialysis company, is also rallying today. So, I mean, Madison, there's still a lot to figure out. Like, do you have to stay on this drug forever? Are there long-term side effects? Like, there's just things that, you know, particular companies and their shares that have been really beaten up because we thought these drugs are going to, you know, cure everything, if you will. They're actually rallying because people are kind of tempering back a little bit.
Right. We were kind of surprised this morning actually to see that because, and some of the analyst notes that I was seeing, they were like, this study, even though it's amazing, is sort of a relief to some of these companies that have really been battered by all of the excitement and hype around these drugs. You know, I guess it shows that there's still a need for these medical devices. And it was a little bit of a relief, I guess, to investors. But yeah, there are still so many questions, like Lisa noted. You know, what happens after people go off the drugs is still a huge question.
Just 30 seconds left, Madison. What do we know about the way companies are working on the next iteration of these pills, for example?
Yeah. So the pills, that's sort of the next thing in line. Also, weight loss drugs that don't cause as much muscle loss is a big thing. Eli Lilly is looking into that. We're seeing companies try to make drugs that cause even more weight loss. There's like lots of different things happening, and lots of studies still to be revealed about these potential knock-on effects on the kidney, liver, heart, all of those things.
It's pretty amazing. Cheaper would be good too.
Yeah.
just gonna say
15 years for sure. For the generics, Carol. That's all you gotta do.
Oh my God. All right. Guys, thank you so much. Madison Mueller, she's health reporter for Bloomberg News, covers this area exclusively, these GLP-1 drugs here in studio. And of course, our thanks to Lisa Jarvis, great smart column, Bloomberg Opinion columnist who covers biotech, healthcare, and the pharmaceutical industry. So I feel like AI has been replaced by the GLP-1.
For now, at least. For now.
Right?
Especially with the Eli Lilly news last week. That's right.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern. Listen on Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, and the Bloomberg Business app. Or watch us live on YouTube.
Want to talk a little bit about immigrant families more likely to use non-bank financial services. So think check cashing, rent-to-own services, Tim, or money orders, than families who were born in the U.S. This is according to a study some folks did at the FDIC. That was back in 2016.
But I looked for more recent studies, by the way. I couldn't find anything more recent. But
I think it's safe to say
It's safe to say it still is an issue. Our next guest is actually working to change that and make financial services more accessible to recent immigrants, in addition to minority-owned businesses and individuals. Kate Howe spent more than a dozen years on Wall Street before she left to start Happy Mango, a company that's doing just that. Kate, who's also CEO of Happy Mango, joins us here in the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studio. Kate, how are you?
Very good. Thank you for having me.
I want to get to your journey to start Happy Mango in a few minutes, but first I want to just get an update from you on, you know, what you're seeing out there, if you're actually starting to see improvement here, and tell us a little bit about what Happy Mango does.
Sure. So, Happy Mango is a technology company. We provide technology to financial institutions that include banks, credit unions, and not-for-profit financial organizations. And many of them are considered CDFIs, which stands for Community Development Financial Institutions.
So is it a B2B, or are consumers actually interacting with Happy Mango?
Yes, to both questions.
Okay.
So it's a B2B2C kind of technology platform where we serve and provide technology to the financial institutions which use Happy Mango's online platform to make affordable credit accessible to individuals who struggle to get access to credit.
So to Tim's question, what are you seeing then among those consumers? Are they strapped or in terms of their financial situation? Just helps us give an idea of maybe what this sector is seeing in terms of the economic outlook and market outlook.
The market outlook, there's a lot of bad news out there right now, but what we are seeing on our platform is actually kind of encouraging. So when we first started Happy Mango in around 2016, our target consumer borrowers were the low to moderate income markets, people who have no credit or have very low credit, who are struggling to get a personal loan or credit card. So we provide the technology to help these community-based financial institutions to extend affordable credit to this segment of the market.
Right.
But over time, especially starting after the pandemic, we are seeing more consumers from immigrants, which is how we started this segment, right? Right now, almost 40% of our borrowers were not originally from the United States. And these are recent immigrants from displaced areas, being displaced from their home places, from Afghanistan, from certain countries in Africa, from South America as well. And we're seeing a lot of immigrants starting to use Happy Mango with the help of our clients who help mm-hmm. them get access to credit. And they are using these loans to get a home, to build a business, to buy their first car, to help them settle in their new home. So
have a financial identity of sorts, right?
Yes, exactly.
How do you help them, though? Help me understand, make the jump for me in terms of what your platform does that makes a bank or a credit union feel comfortable to lend to people who don't really have a financial dossier, if you will.
Yeah, that's a great question. So when we first started, our first client was a bank that was based in the Bronx, Spring Bank. You might have heard of them. It's a very small community bank. But what they saw in their community is that a lot of their depositors, a lot of their customers are struggling to get access to credit. They have to go to payday lenders or rent-to-own, right? They pay 300 to 400% APR.
These are the non-bank financial services we referred to.
Exactly, payday lenders. And then they, oftentimes, these borrowers will have to
AKA crooks. Oh, wait, can I say that? Come on, the rates are crazy. But anyway, please continue.
Okay. So in legal or technical terms, that may be correct in both. But our client, Spring Bank, saw there's a need. They want to change that. They want to get their customers out of these debt traps. And they want to start a loan program for their customers, a small dollar affordable consumer loan. But when they were trying to do that, the conventional underwriting software that's available, they could not lend to anyone because everyone pretty much get turned down because
the way the software was written.
Because it's all based on credit score.
This is something we talked about, like home ownership. A lot of individuals don't have homes, but they rent and they consistently pay their rent. Right. Better metric for folks who are unbanked or underbanked.
That's true. There should be so many ways to measure someone's credit worthiness, right? But a conventional way is just a credit score. So that didn't really help Spring Bank. That's how we first started. We helped them to develop a way to measure someone's ability to pay, not just looking at their credit score.
How does your business work? How do you make money?
So we, our clients are the banks and credit unions. So our clients would pay us for a subscription fee, and then they use it's completely free for their customers to use Happy Mango.
Once somebody's on the platform, or once a bank using your particular platform and or credit union, and then give someone a loan or what have you, what's the, I guess, default rate? Or I'm trying to figure, what's the metric? Is there a metric that you guys can say?
Yes, we do. We measure the default rate. Default rate, what will be your guess for default rate for someone who doesn't have a credit score?
I would guess it's less than for somebody who uses these traditional banking services, quote unquote.
And what would that number be?
Oh, gosh. I have no idea. 5%?
It's less than 5%. It's like these individuals who don't have credit scores, they work really hard to build up their credit.
Is it less than their banked counterparts, or perhaps people who do have a credit history?
Yeah, I think if we use credit card default rate as a proxy, the credit card default rate right now is higher than 5%. So, so it's really about the customers you work with and the relationship you're building in this process. And if I were a lender, Happy Mango is not a lender. We provide technology for lenders. But if I were a lender, I would lend to the kind of customers we lend out all day long.
All right, we got 25 seconds. Why is it Happy Mango? Real quickly.
Okay, so Happy Mango is really the nickname of me and my husband.
Oh, cute. I love it.
I really love that. And guess who is happy and who's mango?
Both sound good. I love mangoes.
Either one is good. We knew there'd be a good story there. We had to ask. Kate, really interesting. Come back and let us know how things are going.
Will do. Thank you.
Kate Howe, she's founder and chief executive officer of Happy Mango, which we now know the origin of her company here in studio. You're listening and watching Bloomberg Business Week, and this is Bloomberg.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization. We live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Business app, and YouTube. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
Come together.
All right, everybody, coming together this week on Wednesday, to be exact, President Biden and President Xi Jinping sitting down in San Francisco. They'll be acknowledging something they'd probably prefer not to, and that is, Tim, they kind of need each other.
They do. Okay, the rivalry between the U.S. and China is here to stay. There are too many grievances on both sides. There are lots of disagreements between them. We know about them all, the future of Taiwan, the basic rules of fair economic competition, and more, but there is still, Carol, plenty that binds these two countries together. Trade, bilateral trade, counting to almost $760 billion in 2022.
Yeah, it's a lot, right? So frenemies to some extent, no doubt about it. So let's get to it. Writing about it is Sean Donnan and Rebecca Wilkins in today's Big Take, which is also in the forthcoming issue of Business Week magazine. You can read it now on the Bloomberg and at Bloomberg.com/Business Week. Here to talk about it, the editor of Bloomberg Business Week, Jill Weber, here in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio, and also Sean Donnan joining us on the phone in San Francisco. Very timely story. We were just talking about this a little bit, too, with Eric Schatz, because this certainly came up at the New Economy Forum in Singapore last week about, you know, just kind of the complicated relationships that are in our world today.
Yeah, and it was like they had to just keep flirting and flirting and flirting forever just to figure out how to get this meeting. And obviously, tensions have been high. We've had some progress get derailed by things like spy balloons. Remember that whole saga?
I forgot about
that. Well, we didn't. yeah. But here we are with a moment where we could see these two do something, and it could be a little windy and just a bunch of talk, or maybe there's real progress here. Sean, how are we supposed to know?
Look, I think the progress here is the fact that these two men are going to sit down and talk for a few hours. And that is really what I think, you know, the world, a lot of CEOs out there, a lot of investors have been waiting for, is to get a sense of whether these two big, powerful economies can find a floor for their relationship, just get to a place where things don't just continually get worse. And that's really the goal this week. We're going to see some announcements, perhaps on a resumption of communications between the two countries' militaries. Maybe we'll see some stuff around climate change, some stuff around fentanyl, and some promises from the Chinese to try and limit the flow of illicit fentanyl to the United States, where it's been fueling the opioid crisis. But really, this is all about managing a rivalry. This isn't flirtation. This is like just trying to look each other in the eye and be polite.
I like how you guys write it. Both sides want to put a floor under the relationship, right? This is a story of aligned self-interest. Whether they like it or not, they have, you know, there are things at stake and they both need each other. So talk to us a little bit about that relationship and why they have to figure out, Sean, a way forward, even if they don't necessarily want to.
Yeah, no, and I mean, this is where, you know, it all gets incredibly complicated, and there's been no relationship like this in history. One of the really interesting things to watch over the last few months as we've kind of been leading up to this meeting has been the change in tone from the Biden administration. So if you think back over the last couple of years, we've heard a lot about competition with China, the need to compete, whether it's invest in semiconductor plants and, you know, bring those supply chains home, to kind of reduce that reliance on China. Well, what we've seen in the last couple of months, and there was a long essay in Foreign Affairs written by Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, in which he actually talked for the first time about the interdependence of these two economies, that they do depend on each other and they need each other. We've heard Janet Yellen just in the last couple of weeks talk about, look, the last thing we want in the world is a breakup. This is all really different from the kind of language we were getting, you know, even a year ago when they were getting ready for their last meeting in Bali, which then, you know, where we saw a kind of warming of ties or resumption of communication, and then that balloon floated down over the United States.
Well, I don't know if it floated or what happened, but, you know, something happened there. So what's in this for Xi in China? What does he hope to get out of this?
So she's got a real problem, and that is an economy that is going through a structural slowdown. He's got an aging population, a declining population. He's also got foreign investors who have been spooked by
and
all
I thought
of this
Biden had it bad. That's a
yeah.
Super
yeah, but stupid. Biden has a re-election coming yeah. up. So okay. right. But I guess yeah, look, that's I mean, a difference.
Absolutely. So I mean, and the common interest here is really the economy, right? Biden desperately needs the U.S. to avoid a recession, right? In the next year, he needs to kind of not have another front in terms of geopolitics. He definitely does not want China invading Taiwan in an election year. On the Chinese side, she really needs help from foreign investors to try and stabilize the economy there and get some of the growth happening again. I mean, it's pretty astonishing. In the third quarter of this year, both the Chinese economy and the U.S. economy grew at the identical rate of 4.9% annually, which is kind of unheard of in recent years. That's bad for China. That's probably faster than they want at the Federal Reserve when it comes to the U.S. But there's a remarkable symmetry there, which kind of points to, you know, the economy being top of mind for both these leaders. We're going to see Xi Jinping have a big dinner after his meeting with Biden, where, you know, we're hearing there's a long waiting list already of CEOs and other business leaders who want to get into that dinner to sit down with him. Just to give you a flavor of how sensitive things are, I was talking to someone who's going to be at that dinner earlier today, and they were saying to me, we don't even know where the dinner is going to be because the Chinese are so worried about protests and so worried about security that they haven't even told us the location yet.
Mm. Wow.
So it's, you know, it's sensitive stuff, but it's important stuff for both of these leaders.
Well, that's actually a perfect segue to my next question, Sean, which is about image and the image that Xi wants to portray back in China. Talk to me a little bit about the choreography there.
The photo ops.
Yeah, look, it's remarkable. This has all been incredibly tightly choreographed. The last thing the Chinese want is any kind of embarrassment for Xi, and one of the big sources of that could be something that's hard to control in a democracy, and that's protests. We've already seen some anti-Chinese protesters line up outside of the venue. Security here is incredibly tight. I mean, the streets of downtown San Francisco and around the convention center where this is being held are, you know, they've put up these big steel barriers to try and keep people out. They really want Xi to be granted respect here, to be feted in a way. They want him to be the kind of the statesman and, you know, that kind of imperial figure projecting Chinese power. And it's, you know, there'll be a lot of stage managing going on this week.
Yeah.
What?
How about that?
Stage managing.
That photo op thing is like for sure.
It's right?
Like, well, and think about it. How, I mean, Sean, part of this is like also the message it sends back home. So obviously a protest picture would be a thing that they would want to avoid. But, you know, on the other side, they also want to show that he's incredibly important and that the world wants to do business with China, right?
Absolutely. Like, and that's, you know, it's, you know, picture of him with some CEOs smiling is going to go a long way.
No, I mean, I love that quote in the story. It was someone at, I think, Georgetown. What he wants are those pictures of him being at the center of attention in San Francisco, right?
Kiss the ring.
Like, yeah. Exactly. What's interesting, too, is I feel like, you know, the relationship to the United States, because it's been a lot more tortured, no doubt about it. But it says something about, is it Chinese people back at home or just about their leader being in charge? I mean, that's ultimately what it's about.
Yeah, look, I think she wants to project that he's in charge and he's got a handle on everything and that the world is courting out. I mean, you know, the other thing we should mention here is, you know, there are risks for Joe Biden in this, right, as well. Mm-hmm. We've already seen Republicans talk about, we saw Mike Gallagher, who's a Republican in the House there, who leads the Special Committee on China Relations there, put out a letter with some other China hawks talking about zombie engagement with China and the Biden administration. You know, Biden's got his election next year at which China is probably going to be an issue. We know Donald Trump likes to hammer the Chinese and often puts that at the center of his stump speeches. So, look, there's two men here who really, they need each other, but they also have some pretty tough domestic situations that they've got to ride through.
It's like a buddy comedy between world leaders. So speaking of needing each other, Jean, if there's one thing that came from this meeting, like when we're writing the story at the end of the week, you know, what do you think the best case scenario is that comes from it? And then, you know, what's maybe the more realistic thing that we might be talking about instead?
Look, I think, you know, the best case scenario here is really that you get some kind of agreement on some big important global issues like climate change, addressing that, or, you know, we've been hearing that they've been talking about getting some debt relief for poor countries in the world. You know, something that shows the U.S. and China, despite their differences, despite their rivalry, can work together on some of these bigger issues that are there for the world. The realistic scenario is that we may just get some handshakes, some smiles, some smaller announcements, and a lot of questions going forward, and, you know, just a lot of prayers on both sides that another balloon doesn't come down, floating down from Alaska.
I think it's interesting.
And derail it all again.
I think it's interesting that he's meeting with business leaders, obviously high tech, right? And I feel like that is just at the core of some of the tensions right now between the U.S. and China. Having said that, it's very hard if you're a company to think about further investment in that country when political leaders disappear, business leaders, right? The rules can change on a very, you know, different sectors. So I find it interesting about kind of the balance of President Xi obviously wanting to be seen in a certain way and certainly having a communications, you know, with folks here in the United States. But at the same time, that volatility still continues, right?
Oh, look, absolutely. Look, they're, you know, doing business in China, if you talk to foreign executives, is harder and harder, right? And it's clear that Xi has been leading an effort to increase self-reliance in China, to kind of make sure that they don't depend on foreign investors as much. But he's not there yet, and until he gets there, he needs the help of foreign investors. At the same time, you know, for all of the problems, China just is a huge market, and it always will be, right? Tim Cook's been there twice this year, the CEO of Apple.
Right.
We've seen Jamie Dimon go over. Elon Musk has been. You know, all of these people rely still on China and the market there for a lot of their revenues. So there's need on a number of sides.
All right. Well, we're going to see what goes down in
right,
San Francisco.
Exactly.
Little buddy comedy by the sea, you know? I'm joking. Like, this is serious stuff. And, like, you know, as we saw earlier today, the mayor of San Francisco pleading for help on the fentanyl front from Xi in China. So serious issues at the heart of this thing. I think we have to expect that little's going to come from this, but like maybe we can hope for the best a little bit because they both, as I think Sean has done a great job pointing out they both do really, both these leaders really do need each other.
Better than G saying, nope, I don't want to meet.
I was just going to say, yeah. at least they are meeting.
Little wins, yeah. Right? Yeah. If something for him to actually come here. Great stuff. Sean, thank you so much. And we'll certainly be watching your reporting and the whole team reporting on that meeting on Wednesday. Sean Donnan, senior economics writer for Bloomberg News, joining us on the phone from San Francisco. Joel Weber, of course, the editor of Bloomberg Business Week. Catch the new issue. It's going to be out on Thursday.
Yeah, this is today's big take, too, so be sure to check it out. You can also read it at Bloomberg.com/businessweek.
Maybe that's why the markets are also sleepy. We're waiting for inflation. We're waiting for this meeting.
CPI.
Or something.
President's meet.
It's just really quiet. All right, this is Bloomberg.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
You drive, so you crazy.
It's the question that drives us.
You drive me crazy.
This is The Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, everybody. Just under 18 minutes left in today's trading session, getting ready to wrap up the Monday trade on this Monday, November 13th. And we've called it a little bit of a meh day when it comes to stocks,
CPI
bonds,
day.
And dollars.
That's kinda,
yeah.
You know,
well,
you know what, John Tucker?
You saw
that's
like...
kinda what...
How exciting. Waiting for the CPI.
You know, we
you're
look
more
for
a core
CPI.
Are you a more
it.
PCE deflator kind of guy?
Oh, deflator all the way.
I consider John, I call him John Supercore Tucker. I think he's a Supercore.
When you strip out everything that you buy.
Yeah.
So
then it's like.
Yeah. You know, the things you don't need to live, like food housing.
Yeah. Supercore.
Supercar. That's Supercar. A great song. Remember that from the 70s?
Yeah, it's a new Marvel movie. All right, let's get to it. Let's talk about the markets. David Dietz is with us, managing principal and senior investment strategist at PPAC Private Wealth Management. $10.4 billion in assets under management. Joining us on Zoom from Summit, New Jersey. It is kind of a wacky, you know, it is funny, David, we're like laughing about the inflation print, but it does feel like we go from data point to data point. And, you know, these are the things that potentially can move the markets, especially when it feels like you check out the Wall Street community and they're all over the map when it comes to what the Fed may do next year. So what's important to folks who've got to put money to work, want to put money to work in this environment? What do you say to them?
I think the number one metric for investors to look at is interest rates, because interest rates control the present value of not just stocks, but real estate, all sorts of assets as you present value it. So as interest rates go up, that's a fierce headwind in the face of all assets and vice versa. And of course, what's driving those interest rates? I think the number one factor has got to be inflation, because as purchasing power is eroded, lenders demand more in return for loaning their funds. So if we can get that inflation rate continuing to come down, I think potentially these higher interest rates become a tailwind and can spell good news for investors.
Do you think we can get the inflation rate to come down?
Well, we've already seen it come down dramatically. If you look over the last 12 months, we were approaching a double-digit year-over-year increases.
But get down now, to 2%, the Fed's target.
But yeah, our target is still not there, but we've come a long way. And I think, of course, in investing, the key is not exactly where are you, but where are you going? Of course, that begs the question. But we think we're going to see tomorrow a little bit more relief, particularly in the month-over-month core numbers. That's going to give the Federal Reserve confidence. The Federal Reserve, just like the rest of us, they're looking at those inflation metrics. If they see inflation continuing to come down, no matter how you define it, they're going to be a little less hawkish, although they're going to be far from saying mission accomplished for a long time here.
David, it's a great party trick, a great parlor game in terms of guessing what the Fed's going to, I mean, they're going to do what they're going to do. And I think, like, you know, we are, most read story in the Bloomberg is just strategists
You're
trying to figure it out.
Carol.
No, I just think, you know, like I said, so when you talk about if inflation is what matters, so where would you tell people to commit new money at this point?
Well, certainly fixed income looks a lot better than it's looked at for years now, of course. You know, it's not just that you get that 10-year at about 4.6%. Some of the shorter dated ones are even more. And what's even more important is the nominal interest rate versus what the inflation rate is. As we see inflation continuing to come down towards that 2% level, that real margin of interest keeps expanding. Right now it's about 2.4%. Gee, if most people thought they could lock in 2.4% over inflation, a lot of people would throw in the towel on stocks and go home. Of course, it's not going to be that simple.
Okay. Let's talk about some of the companies that you have on your radar. We love talking picks with you. Okay, so Bank of America, give us your thoughts on Bank of America. 3.46 dividend yield, 3.46% dividend yield.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, blue chip investing coast-to-coast franchise here, one of the largest amounts of insured deposits in the country, which allows them to tap into very low-cost loans because people don't have to worry about getting their money back. What has happened, of course, with that inverted yield curve, banks' business is borrowing short-term lending long. That's been turned upside down with this inverted yield curve. What we do think is if we're right that inflation continues to recede, that's ultimately going to allow the Federal Reserve to end this rate hiking campaign, and possibly Fed futures are now predicting it coming down. All of a sudden, they can pay even lesser deposits, loan money at still a good rate, and that's where their profit margins are going to widen. Meanwhile, the betting is very skeptical on it. You've got very close to book value in Bank of America. You've got a dividend yield which is significantly above what it's been over the last 5 to 10 years. And indeed, that dividend has grown double digits over the last 5 years, bigger than some of its peers like JP and Wells Fargo. So we like Bank of America near a 52-week low here going forward.
Hey, listen, do you care? Was it last week at a Reuters conference, B of A CEO Brian Moynihan says the firm has an ongoing succession plan. When decided, the board will execute that plan. Do you like a B of A that might potentially not have a Brian Moynihan at the helm?
Well, I mean, all companies need to focus on their succession plan. And gee, the only thing I worry more about someone that's talking about a succession plan is the company says, we have not a clue as to what our succession plan might be. So I think that's very prudent. I think Brian Moynihan is doing a nice job. He certainly got the support of Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway. So I don't see any near-term transition. But the fact that they're thinking about it, I think it's always prudent.
All right, Chevron. It's interesting. The list of names that you sent us, B of A, Chevron, CVS, they all pay about a 3.5% or more dividend, Chevron with a 4.2% dividend. How much of that is determines your choice within the equity world?
You know, Carol, it's not just a nice fat dividend, which is more than twice the S&P 500. It's that dividend growth. Chevron, of course, is in that elite group called Dividend Aristocrats. They've increased that dividend more than 25 years in a row. Plus, at the same time, they're buying back about 8% of the value of the company each year. Your total shareholder return is going to be 10% plus. That, to me, signifies, you know, the strength of their business, their commitment to reward shareholders. You know, Chevron is up there with, you know, Exxon, but Chevron's fallen about 17% this year. Well, why is that? Well, one is their third quarter earnings were a bit mixed. They had some delays in starting the Kazakhstan field. We think that's short term. And of course, investors are still scratching their heads on the Hess acquisition. We think it makes a lot of sense. They didn't have to use any cash. They're getting great deposits in Guyana. But the fact of the matter is the Hess is committed to fund a lot of the development in Guyana. So it's no extra free cash flow. It's a stock for stock deal, which means Chevron's going to have to pay out that rich dividend to all the new owners coming in via the Hess shares.
Right.
All in all, we'll take that 17% discount.
Right, right. Exactly. That $171 per share, enterprise value of about $60 billion. So, yeah, interesting.
It's a lot of money. Or yeah. Shares, I should say.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right, David Dietz, thank you so much. Over at PPAC Private Wealth Management on Zoom from Summit, New Jersey. He's the senior investment strategist there.
This is the Bloomberg Business Week podcast, available on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Listen live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern on Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, TuneIn, and the Bloomberg Business app. You can also watch us live every weekday on YouTube and always on the Bloomberg Terminal. Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.